Mi Manda Niganin Podcast. Mi Gwech Bezindamek.
Ani, Candace?
Anin.
Anishna.
Mami Quendem Nongwa.
Mi go kini, mi gwech.
Oh, abadek sagwa.
Minogishgat, na?
Eh, minogishgat.
Anishna anankian nongwa.
Oh, I'm here joining you today on this podcast and this Niganin podcast, and I'm looking forward to sharing some stories and information.
All right, mi gwech. Ani bojo kenawaya, welcome to the Niganin podcast. Like Candace said, Candace is joining me today to talk about a Tikmikshing Anishinaabeg. We are doing a tour of all of our communities that Niganin services, and today we're visiting a Tikmikshing. Carrie Kamanda, Da Jaganashi Noswin Awen, Mishkiki Nibogokwe, and Da Anishinaabe Noswin, Makwan Dodem, Ganabajing Donjaba, Anishinaabe and Dao, She, Her, and Dan Kazan. I'll get you to introduce yourself too, Candace.
Ani Bojo, Candace Oswagash Dijnakas, a Tikmikshing Anishinaabek Donjaba, Wapsheshi Dodem, Kwebebon Kwet, Anishinaabek Noswin.
Uh-huh. So I'm really excited that you're able to join us today. I know it's a busy time of year for you with year end and stuff. It's the March, April sort of time of year. But I thought that it's so much better when community members can share their own stories from their home communities. So I hope you're just the first of many visitors we're going to have to share about where you're from and what's the tea going on in a Tikmikshing.
So I think the biggest thing going on right now in a Tikmikshing is it's sugar bush time. It's and I've found over the past few years there seems to be more and more individuals within the community starting to do sugar bush. We just completed 2 boils this past weekend, so it was nice. We got 7 liters from one boil, and we got about 6 liters from the second. But just seeing, you know, everybody, you know, going out and, you know, hearing that they're setting up, and the sugar bush where we're set up has been part of our family for probably at least 35-40 years. Prior to my son and I going in, it was my dad and my uncle Francis Ba that had, you know, gone in. And where I'm set up is where my dad tapped the trees. My sister is also set up, her and her husband and her daughter. And where they're set up is where my uncle Francis Ba set up. And it's also close to their old boil site. So we don't boil our sap water. We don't boil it down back there. We bring it, we haul it out to home, and we actually boil in the backyard at my parents' place. So it's a little bit more convenient and so forth. But yeah, the boiling process is an all-day thing, and I see other community members, they set up in their yards as well and boil. So it's nice to see that, you know, that's coming back, and, you know, more and more community members are getting involved in that.
It sounds like a good time to connect with family and stuff, right? Especially if you're like neighbors are doing it too. That must look pretty cool. Cause I'm imagining where the houses are, in a Tikmikshing, they're kind of close together in some areas, right? So yes. Can you like see other people in their yards doing it at the same time as you?
Not where my parents live. But I know up close to the office here, there are 2 individuals who boil in their backyards, and I can see their barrels set up where they, pour their sap into before they boil. So I can see them set up. So, and I think the way they're set up is a little bit different than how we do ours.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, you talked about setup. I'm trying to picture, because I know there's a few ways. My sister does maple syrup, and they have like lines running through the bush and like a big giant industrial thing. And I also know people who have a bucket and a little thing you stick into the tree, right? So how do you guys do it?
So we have spiles, and we have the plastic 2-gallon pails, and we also have lids for ours. So we drill our holes into the sugar maples, drill our holes and tap in our spiles, hang our pails, and then we go in every day and collect. And we have 5-gallon pails that we collect with. And normally we can get our side-by-side in. I had a snow machine, but it's been acting up, so we haven't had that to take in. And we had a little sleigh for a little while, but the runners broke on it. So now we're carrying the pails from the sugar bush out to the road. So we only fill them about half, because it, you know, they get heavy, and we carry 2. So it's, you know, nicely balanced. But this year we didn't set up as much as we usually do. We normally set up between 80 and 100 pails. This year we only set up 23. I still have, you know, quite a bit of syrup from last year. So I'm good syrup wise. My parents are like right out, and they've been out since about October, November. So I thought, okay, I'm going to set up just a few pails, get them some syrup, and they'll be good to go again. But looking at the communities and some of the others and how they're set up, they're just set up the same way. They don't have the little hoses that run to one location. And even their boiling setup is a lot of them, it looks like they have a huge stove with a big pan that sits right over. So you see some of the steam from the water that's evaporating once they're boiling down their sap. We kind of have a similar setup, but we have a finishing pot that's right over a fire, and we just keep transferring everything. So we have 3 going as when we first start, and if you walk by my parents' place, you know, like 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, because that's when we usually get started, you can just see all the thick steam, the smoke coming from the backyard. I haven't noticed if when the others are boiling down, if that's the same way. Another individual, they have a place, well, where they're set up, where they boil down, it's, they have like a canopy over everything, and they usually do their fires there all year round, and family sits around there. So I know they also use that same fire pit to boil their sap down as well. So the community, they also have staff that set up, and they do sap just for the community and whoever needs or wants syrup. So I don't know how many trees they tap for theirs, and when they boil down at the sacred grounds where our powwow was held every year. So that's where they boil theirs down. And I haven't had a chance to go out when they're boiling, because either I'm working or we're boiling ours down. So it's kind of hard to try and check out everybody else, what they're doing, and you know how they're, you know, boil down their sap.
Right. I'm thinking about things like, you mentioned your family has been boiling a couple of generations at certain stands, and other community members must also have certain areas they visit. And so that connection to land and generations of doing a similar thing. Do you also, maybe I'll rephrase this. So someone I know is into forestry, and I know he's run some workshops in community about, like, how do you tend your sugar bush? Like, how do you maintain, like, the stand or the undergrowth and that kind of stuff to, like, optimize things? And Anishinaabe folks have been doing that kind of gardening, with air quotes, or working alongside where we live, of coaxing the things that help us survive, as well as helping nurture those things as well, right? So anyway, that's a really long way to ask you if you guys maintain your bush, like, in the off season, or if you do other things to help with your harvesting.
So we don't do a whole lot. We did go in a few years ago, and we cleared a little bit of the underbrush, and trying to make trails for the side-by-side, and going in with the snow machine to just make it easier to go in and out. As there was some existing trails, but they weren't the greatest trails either to use. So we went in and created a little bit easier trails for easier access. And right in along the right in the trees, we try to make some smaller trails in there. During the winter months, I usually drag my niece out with me, and we go snowshoe within our sugar bush in the winter months, and try to pack trails and makes it easier to go in. This year, this past winter, we didn't do that. So we had to go in and break trail and bust through the snow and pack along the trees. And it gets quite deep in there. Like, when we're packing snow and busting trail, like, we're sinking, like, you know, almost hip deep. And so you got one leg that's, you know, kind of sunk right in, and you're trying to pull that leg out, and your other leg is sinking. So, you know, but it's a lot of fun. And it's a great workout.
Yeah. I was playing outside yesterday, and we're actually in a yellow birch or golden birch. I'm not sure. I think it's a yellow birch stand. We drove through quite a big one. And I mentioned to my friend, like, hey, did you know you can tap these trees? Like, you can tap maple trees for syrup, right? And, but yeah, it was soft, and the snow was only a couple, like, 2 feet deep, I think. So, but I can't imagine breaking new snow that's been there all year. Wow.
I mean, once you kind of get it packed for, you know, a week or so, it's nice. But then when the temperatures start to warm up, like yesterday, it was, you know, quite warm out. So we're going back out there, and now we get it packed so far because you got all the ice, and because it would melt a little bit because it would get warm, and then you get a layer of ice, and then you get more snow. So that snow is on top of that little bit of ice, and you go in, and when it starts to get warm, then you're sinking even more. And I always used to think, like, it's not that deep back there, right? Because you got all the trees that are, you know, being sheltered. The ground is being sheltered from the snow because of all the trees. But that's not the case. And I thought that, it'd be easy to break trail. But the very first year my son and I took over where our family would set up, was we've probably been back there now about 5 years or so, and we didn't go far in, and so there was not a whole lot of snow that year, so it was kind of hard to really get an idea of how deep it is. And we went in with snowshoes as well. This year we didn't do the snowshoes, so I actually got to see how deep it actually can get back there, because up until this year we'd go in and we would do pack our trails, and we were going in every week, and, you know, we'd go in on a Saturday and, you know, walk around the sugar bush to the different trees that we were going to tap and that. So, but yeah, it's been
I like that, saying hi to some friends, hi, we're going to come back and visit you soon, and Does sound like a good workout. I got snowshoes this year, but did I use them? Nope, not yet. But I wanted to go back to Tikmixing. And I was just thinking, as you're describing, like, all the snow and the trees, and that maybe we have some listeners who don't even know where Tikmixing Anishinaabeg is. So I thought I would share that it's on the north shore of Lake Huron, as are all our communities at Niigaani Services, and it's closest to Sudbury, right? It's our First Nation community just outside of Sudbury, and you guys are even on the transit route. Because I sometimes see the bus coming in and out when I go visit.
Yes, so we're about 20 kilometers west of Sudbury, and having the Sudbury Transit come in is somewhat new. It's been coming in for probably about 3 years now. Maybe not quite 3 years, because I think it was just before the pandemic. It started coming in just after the pandemic started. But yeah, so that was quite exciting that the Sudbury Transit actually comes into the community now, instead of just going by the out on the highway, because we'd have to walk out so to the highway, and you know, nobody needs to do that anymore.
I remember seeing people waiting on the bus stops out there and thinking like, oh man, that's kind of, it's not that long of a walk, but yes it is if you're taking groceries or carrying things or have little ones. So yeah, that's cool that you guys have it right coming right in the village. Okay, so what other things do we need to know about a Tikmixing? It's sugarbush season, but what about some of the families? Are there big family names from there?
Yes, there are. I'm not part of a big family name, but some of our bigger family names are Nuchitai and Nebionquit. Those are our two bigger ones. Then we have Shabonquit. That's a fair size. And then I think our next biggest one to that would probably be Napons.
Yeah. As you're saying those names, their ringing bells are familiar of hearing those names in my travels. And then I also have community ties to the Tikmixing. My grandmother is... I don't know, my mom's mom, I guess, is from there. But there's other family there too, right? And she was a Potatagoose. And then I feel like, I'm going to get in trouble again for saying the wrong name, just like I did in Ganabajing. When I said Chief Ironwood, and it's actually Chief Rottenwood, so here's my official apology, Commandas, for that. But I think we also have Kabonis in my family, but I think they're from Wiki.
Yeah, it's just interesting to learn all your family ties, eh? Mm-hmm. I know we have an individual who started working for the community, and she was going back and doing family trees, and I don't even know how far back. At some point, there's, in my line, we have ties to Mississauga First Nation. We have some family ties there to, I believe it's to Kadas.
Yeah, I mean, there are connections, I'm imagining, like, all over, because we traveled and we gathered in certain areas and married and did those kinds of things. So, yeah, I'm always curious. That seems to be one of the first early questions that come up when you meet someone new, right? Oh, hey, what family are you from? Like, are we cousins? Or how do we relate to each other? So, yeah.
Yeah, because we migrated, right? Not migrated, or we would move to different areas, right? To depending on the season and for what purpose, right? So, I know my family, they would go to Beni during the summer months, and
where?
Beni, that's along the Highway 144 corridor, okay. Up towards where Cartier is. going up towards Timmins. We're probably Benny is probably about an hour, maybe 45, an hour or so drive from where Tikmixing is located right now. But in Benny, it was shared with me, and I found out a few years ago that there's actually a grave site in Benny that has a grave marker that has the Oswagish last name on it. So there's no first name, so I don't know who in my family is in that, you know, at that grave, at that grave site. But there is a grave marker with Oswagish on it. So I thought that was quite interesting. So I want to take a ride out there someday and, you know, just go see the marker. And, you know, that's, you know, one of my ancestors, and, you know, maybe place some flowers down and clean it up a little bit.
Yeah. I want to take a ride out there too, because I feel like there's not too many places in Ontario I haven't been, but I feel like that's one of them. So, the other thing I'm wondering, because your family went there, but being so close to Sudbury, are there community memories, like folks in the community who remember, like, where in the Sudbury area people from Tikmixing used to be, or even is the where the village is now, is that where it's always been? Or
so the village, the current village now, is not always where it's been. Where our powwow grounds are, where we host our annual powwow, just on when you're driving into the powwow grounds and you're looking at the powwow grounds, you have the water on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side, if you walk over that hill, right up on top of that hill used to be homes. But if on the other side of the hill, along the side of the hill, there would be some homes there as well. And today that's commonly known as, well, for Tikmixing members, it's commonly known as the Black Lake Stretch, because the water on the other side of the road is Black Lake. So we normally call it the Black Lake Stretch, and, you know, community members know exactly where you're talking about. So, but along that hill would be houses, a lot of root cellars. And my grandmother's home was actually across the road along the side of the hill closer to the lake. But the road that's used to leave the powwow grounds, on the right hand, so when you get to the top, right to the top part, on the right hand side, there's still, you can see the old road, but there was the old church that was there. A little further down, there was also the old school. And you used to be able to see the foundations of them, but they have since gone in and, you know, cleaned out the old foundations and that. But there's, you know, there's still that old road. Our old cemetery is also back there, close to our powwow grounds. And that's when you get to the top of the hill, when you're leaving the powwow grounds, if you make, you can see a road on your left-hand side, and if you follow that road, it'll take you to our old cemetery as well.
So I'm trying to picture in my head, because powwow grounds are quite a ways out. Like, you, when you come into the community and you stay on that road, like, forever, it feels like it doesn't end at the powwow grounds, but I've pretty much only gone past the powwow grounds once, I think. So I'm picturing Black Lake is on, if you're driving to, like, leaving the village, going to the powwow grounds, Black Lake is on the left. If you went across that, are you coming out in Lively? Or, like,
no.
I'm trying, no, okay. Not even close.
Not even close, no.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that was one of the old village sites. And that was before they moved, a lot of them moved to Panage. And they slowly migrated to Panage. I can't recall why they moved to Panage. My dad remembers growing up and being in Panage. And then eventually they moved to the current village. And it only started out, there was only maybe two or three families that were in the current village. And then everybody slowly moved this way. And it's interesting to see how much the community has grown. As a little girl, I remember there was only two streets. Well, more like three streets. There was that main, what they called Reserve Road. And our streets didn't have names back then. We just called it First and Second Street. So there was Lakeshore, we called First Street. And then Monty, what's known as Monty today, we called Second Street. So for the longest time, there was only those two. And there was only, maybe 30, 40 homes at the time. And then as the community grew, then Pine, what's known as Pine Grove now, that came in around probably the early 80s. They built that road and they put a few homes there, and we just started calling it Third Street. So for the longest time, it was, First, Second, and Third Street.
Right. So that's how they do it, because that seems to be common names in towns and cities around the world, or at least in like this part of the world. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, because I used to visit Chickmicshing when I was little too. I had cousins that lived here, and it was fun for things to be close, and like going to the, I just remember going down that hill right by when you come out by the community center. I think there's a fence there now, but I don't know. I just remember running around in the village when I was little. So I'm curious about like how many folks, like you're saying it's pretty small. Is that because the Chickmicshing has a small population, or they were spread out way more, or lived off reserve? Or
I think we just had a lot of members who lived off reserve. We had a lot who they enfranchised, or if they had joined the army, so they had to give up their status when they joined the army. And just a lot of for work and employment and that and other opportunities, they didn't live on reserve. Our community has since then, since I was a little girl, has grown quite significantly, because like I said, there was only just those three streets. And in the 90s, where our one little village is, well, it's close to the main village, but it's off of Gabori, that came about around the 90s. And then just in the last 10 years or so, we have the village now up on top of the hill. So when you're heading out into the bush from the community, there's what is called Nora Road. And so we have that little subdivision up on top of the hill. But I remember when our roads weren't paved as well. And maybe you remember coming out before our roads were paved, like it was all gravel road. And I think when we first got pavement, it was like, it was exciting. Like we were so excited, and we would, go and have draw on the pavement, and it was just.
Get the chalk out. Yeah.
Get out the chalk and make hopscotch. And it was just.
So when you're talking about the new developments that happened too, reminded me that Chickmicshing is one of our communities that have land code. I think you have a few other things too, governance wise, that maybe have assisted or with the growth or the direction of a Chickmicshing. I'm not really sure. But yeah, do you remember when that came into effect? I'll put you on the spot here.
So we had the Chinook-Gaywin, which came in, I want to say, probably the early 2010s, mid-2010s. The land code came in just shortly after that. We've had our land code probably in the last 5-6 years, maybe a little longer than that. But we have a new one coming in, hopefully a new one coming in, right? The child well-being, the child initiative, Cognos one coming in. And, you know, I'm hoping that comes in, right? Going back to looking after our own kids and
yeah, that. From C92, because there's so much, in my opinion, my humble opinion, and that's, you know, maybe I'm biased because I do work with the Koganaswan team for North Shore Tribal Council. And there's a few other options, like communities can make their own decision of how they want to make their child well-being law. But yeah, the opportunity is so cool because it's not just following Ontario and looking after children, also recognizing like healthy communities and families also take care of our children, right? And so when you look at it from a broader lens of things like housing and education and what kind of supports family needs, I think it's really exciting. So yeah, I'm glad you're excited too.
Yeah, because I remember as a kid growing up, I mean, you had to really watch what you were doing. Like, you couldn't, if you were doing something you shouldn't be doing and another parent or another adult saw you, there was no question, there was no fear that they would go up and they would say, like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? You know, you shouldn't be doing that. It's not right. And, you know, you would get the third degree. And you knew that when you got home, you were in trouble once you got home, because that parent or that adult would either go visit your parents and say, hey, you know, this is what your child was doing. This is what I saw them. And, or they would get a phone call saying, this is what your child was doing. So you knew when you got home, you were in trouble. So not only did you get in trouble once for it, you got in trouble twice for it, right? But, you know, there was no question about, you know, sharing or saying anything to children if you were doing something you shouldn't be doing. It was, you know, today, if I was to say something to a child, you know, they'd be running and telling their parents. And some parents today are like, you know, who are you to tell my child what they can and can't do, kind of thing. So, you know, it'd be nice to be able to go back to that. And when, you know, when they say, you know, it takes a community to raise a child, you know, everybody made sure that child was safe. And doors were never locked in our communities. So if I was in trouble or I needed help or if I got hurt or whatever was happening, I could just go to the nearest house and walk in and say, like, you know, oh, I cut my leg, or oh, somebody's, you know, picking on me, or, you know, I'm being chased by a dog, or whatever the case is. I could just go to the nearest house and, you know, walk in and I would get that help, and they would either, you know, make sure I got home safely, or my parents or somebody would come and get me, right? So today you can't just walk into somebody's home, or sometimes it's just a knock and you walk in. Today you can't do that. A lot of times their doors are going to be locked, or their windows are going to be locked, or, you know, sometimes maybe they don't want to get involved, so they just don't answer their door.
Right. Yeah, it was reminding me of a story Emma Miwasaki told me here in Cutler about. They live close to the playground. And same thing, right? She would say kids would be there and they're the closest house. So the kids wander over. Hey. And always, you know, just looking out for them or taking care of, like, well, what needs to be done, and then doing it, right? Yeah. Definitely, I would hesitate to knock on anybody's door now, myself, just because of, like, how we are in our house and recognizing how other folks are. So, yeah, I think it would be much more open and caring for each other if we were able to get back to that kind of space, right? So, make wedge.
Yeah, and then, or even knowing who all the kids are. I don't even know who all the kids are in my community anymore.
And you know what? Okay, I know I'm getting old because now it's not just, who's your parents? Now it's like, who's your grandparents? When I see young people and I don't recognize them or, who's this person? Yeah. So that's an interesting time of life to be in for me.
Yeah, and maybe some of it goes back to community involvement, right? We would have community picnics. We would have, our winter carnival, and everybody from the community attended, right? They would have all different kinds of activities. So winter carnival, there was tea boiling, there was log sawing, there was boot hockey, there was snow sculpture making, there was, when they make the sleds or things out of the cardboard boxes, soapbox derbies, there was, skating, there was just all kinds of activities for like everybody. And now they're still well attended, but it's not attended by everybody in the community. Community picnics, they were held out at what we call our first beach, where everybody would go and swim in the summer, or they were held in the community at our old community hall. And the old community hall housed the library. It was a school at one point. The year that the elementary teachers went on strike, the kids from our community continued their learning, and they opened that back up, and they had the kids attend so they could continue learning. So they kind of had some time off, but they kind of didn't during that strike because they were expected to go to the hall and continue learning. Their days weren't a full day like school, but our community hall was our main gathering, our old community hall. That was our library. And for a while, that's where we had the medium program. So that, they called it the medium program as opposed to the food bank. So it was just, but going back to our community picnics, they had bed races. We don't have bed races, and maybe we couldn't have bed races now because a lot of beds don't have the wheels on them anymore underneath. And
but I was trying to picture, how do you have a bed race? I was picturing a mattress and people care. Oh no. Okay. Rolling it. I thought you said bag races, like a three, what do you call it? Sack. When you're jumping in the sacks, that's what I thought you meant.
Yeah, but they would have those too. And it was just, like I said, it was, everything was well attended, and they would have things that would in activities for all age groups. The one year at one of our community picnics, they had a baby race. So new moms had brought, they would bring their babies out, especially the ones who were able to start getting around.
And like they would crawling babies?
They were crawling. Some of them would just pull on their tummies, but they would put them at one end and they would run to the other and they would start. And they'd be calling their child, and their child, like, looking around because all these people are around, right? And they're trying to just say, come on, come on, come on. And, kind of see who was, the fastest baby or. That was a lot of fun to watch. And, all these babies wondering what's going on and that, but yeah.
I'm wondering now when we do our other community visits, because we still have to chat with folks from Mississauga and Thessalon and Sagamuck, I believe. Now I'm curious what kind of community gatherings they had in theirs. Okay, so it's... I think we're kind of winding down a little, or I'm thinking about like, what else before we sign off, like, what else do people need to know about a Tiknik Shing?
So I guess one of the stories I'd like to share that I heard growing up is the connection that a Tiknik Shing and acknowledging have. So there's there's a story about an animal or some kind of being within Whitefish Lake, and our power grounds are actually off of Whitefish Lake. I've heard that it's a fish. I've heard that it's a big snake. And the story with the big snake is that this snake had a tunnel in the underneath the water somewhere, had a tunnel, and would use that tunnel to travel. And the snake would also travel to Ganabaging. And my understanding is Ganabaging does have a lot of tunnels where this serpent, I believe they call the serpent, would get around in. But that tunnel, one of those tunnels also connect to a Tikmixing and connect to Whitefish Lake. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I do have to believe that there is something within the waters of Whitefish Lake. My father-in-law, he was probably in his 30s, maybe late 20s or so, and he used to fish all the time with his siblings on Whitefish Lake. And they would go fishing. And the one time he was out fishing and he saw something. And we would ask him, well, what did you see? But he refused to talk about it. He refused to share the story and what he saw. Because after that day, he refused to go fishing within Whitefish Lake. He refused to even step in the water in Whitefish Lake. So he saw something that made him say that that's it, no more. And I wish, you know, he passed away some years ago, and I wish he would have shared the story of what it was he saw, and if it was that, whether it was that big fish or that big snake that lives on the bottoms of Whitefish Lake.
Right. I always am so fascinated by the other things that a lot of folks don't talk about, right? So when you're talking about this story, and it does resonate with Ganabaging and tunnels going to other lakes in the North Shore area, I didn't know that there was one to Tikmixing, so that's really cool. But also thinking about Wanapate, like if you go out to Wanapate, they have like a big statue on one of their, when you first go in the community at the, I don't know if it's a marina or something. And then, so that's like a little further east, just outside of Sudbury. Or if you go west to Superior, we talked about that too, right? I'm going to say this wrong. Mizhu Piju, which is not a serpent, but it's definitely a being in the water. I don't know. It's just, it makes me really curious, right? Like, it's like, wow, who knows these stories? And because I also want to be cautious too, right? Of not just like blasting out there and saying or going places I'm not supposed to be, you know, in not the best way. So yeah, anyway, bubbles of curiosity.
Yeah. And it's like, it's, yeah, because you want to keep the stories alive, but at the same time you want to, and I understand with, you know, with that being cautious, right? Like, you know, I want to make sure I'm getting it right as well, right? Because, but yeah, that was just one of the stories that I had heard in regards to that snake, and that snake traveled from a Tikmixing to Ganabaging. So, yeah, it was the one time only that I had heard of that story. But there is, you know, maybe, you know, not only just one being living in the waters of a Tikmixing, but, you know, two beings living in the waters.
Right. I definitely would not like to come across them. So just putting that out there. So thank you for sharing about Atikmixing and what goes on there, and some of the family things, and where you're at. The one thing we didn't talk about, which I'm kind of glad actually, is like the impacts of mining and the city of Sudbury on Atikmixing, because you're so close. But I really like the focus today being on family and connection to outside and the land and things. So miigwech, Candace.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I enjoyed being here today.
Yeah. Well, thank you to all our listeners as well. If you have something you want to share about Atikmixing, let us know. Or if you want to get involved with the podcast, reach out, and we'd love to connect. We're going to be going back across the North Shore. I'm not sure where we'll be stopping, but definitely still have to visit Sagamuck, Mississauga, and Thessalon. So miigwech to everyone listening, and ba mam pi.
Ba mam pi.